All right, text in. What are you petty about? We do the Tuesday Pettycast each and every week. I'll give you one thing right now. They're doing a question on TV right now on ESPN. The question on Get Up is, who do you have in the NFC, Eagles or the field? The field meaning the other 15 teams in the NFC.
The answer is always the field.
Always the field. Like a good team, a great team has like a 25% chance of winning their conference.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it's I hate the people that don't look at gambling odds, write these questions. I'm like, who do I take? If I say the Eagles, then I'm the dumbest person. Even if I like the Eagles.
Right.
I'm really stupid.
Even if you think the Eagles are the best team this century.
Yes.
It's the field.
It's always
the field.
It's always that should be the most boring question ever. It's always the field.
For the entire league, a championship.
Different
if you go within divisions or something.
Yeah, exactly. No, I think the AFC South, you can make an argument. It's Texans versus the field, something like that this year. You know, they're like a coin flip to win the division. They got a 50% chance. All right, Pettycast, let's do this here. First one, Chandler Rome. Chandler Rome on his one of the Athletic podcasts, the Foul Territory podcast. He was on there with AJ Pruszynski. And they were talking about Astro injuries last week after the Ronel Blanco news came down. And I think Chandler actually sums up petty for a lot of us here when it comes to how the Astros handle their injury news.
I'm not here like seeking like medical records of players. Like, I don't want to know what medicines they're on. I don't want, like, we're not asking for much here, but the clarity that they provide is non-existent. And the prognoses they give is usually it exceeds what they say, or it's not all the way true. Like the lack of just alignment and communication has been something that has now spanned three general managers. It spanned three field managers. So this is not something that is new this year. It's something that has been for a while. The Tucker contusion thing, I mean, at the end of the day, like, it got to be where like they were making him look bad because like fans thought he was out for 3.5 months with a bruise when, you know, I talked to doctors. I wrote a story where I quoted like four orthopedic surgeons who said like, yeah, you know, it's possible to be out for four. These things can take this long to heal for a bone bruise, but it's not that common. And come to find out there was a fracture in there.
Okay. I think Chandler, I think you are appropriately petty there because I'm petty about this. I think a lot of Astro fans, very petty about the way that the team handles injuries and the lack of clarity.
It does lead you to wonder exactly why are they so opaque about it. And I wonder if it's simply like one extra competitive advantage. And it might seem trivial and it might seem stupid. But remember, these baseball teams calculate getting a little edge as, hey, this is worth an extra third of a win every 3 years.
Yeah.
Like it's that they get that finite with it that they might feel like, man, playing it close to the vest as much as possible for as long as possible just keeps people guessing in trade discussions, anything else. I don't know. It is weird because it does almost, it's starting to feel like it's like you're flipping off the fan base at times.
Yeah.
It just, hey, like it's a sly, like, yeah. Remember, they were saying that Javier was making progress right up until they announced that he was getting Tommy John surgery.
Right.
It's very frustrating.
Right.
It's one thing if you don't tell us anything, but then like to dangle out hope and then, oh no, by the way, no, he and Luis Garcia are getting Tommy John surgery together. They're going to hold hands the entire time.
Yeah. Like, why are they doing, why are they doing this? You know what? I was unfair to Chandler there. Chandler and us, we're not being petty. The Astros are being petty by just for no reason withholding information from all of us.
Yeah.
Like, why are you doing it? Because we can. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. All right. To be clear, they've never said that, but that's what it feels like for sure.
It does set you up, though, because every time you hear about elbow discomfort and it doesn't end up being something tragic, then you're that much more excited
okay.
for it.
Okay. When has that happened? I'm still waiting.
It's happened before.
Has it? Okay.
Yeah. I think Dubin had discomfort.
Did he? Okay.
Yeah.
That's one.
I don't know.
Yeah. All right. Colin Cowherd speaking out. This is last week. In the aftermath of the Caitlin Clark Angel Reese situation, you know, the hard foul on Angel Reese, this is true. This is the case with a lot of sports that are not mainstream. There are fans, longtime fans of those sports, that get very protective of the sport. Even when new fans are coming to the arena, it's almost like, well, I'll let Colin Cowherd state the case right here.
There's these people who are fans of indie bands, international soccer, and the WNBA. They have this gatekeeping mentality. will tell you who's great. Colin, I was watching the WNBA long before Caitlin Clark. Well, yeah, it's not my problem your social life was boring. I'm not going to apologize for watching it when it got really interesting.
Okay, so that was, I am with him on this. Gatekeeper fans of sports are very annoying.
Yeah.
You know, like the ones that they don't want, it's almost like they don't want their sport or activity to become incredibly popular.
They were, yeah, you know, it's like the analogy he brought up of the independent band, you know, the guys that liked it, they only liked that band before they went commercial or whatever. I've been here forever. It's a natural human tendency. I think the biggest thing, because I would say when the Tebow mania was going on, the NFL was not a fringe sport at all. But when it brought so many people into the conversation that didn't have a single clue what they were talking about, that it gets annoying.
Yeah.
So I will stand with the very petty gatekeepers of the WNBA.
You will, okay.
Yes, okay. Yes. Okay. Not as somebody that's actually followed the WNBA, but who supports their pettiness, Sean. I will support their pettiness. Like, no, we enjoy games where there's only 2,000 people in attendance. Damn it!
Do you have an activity or a sport or a certain genre of entertainment that you like that you gatekeep or
don't want other people dipping into?
Or it would be like for me, it's easy. Like WWE would be one for me that would be lined up to be gatekeeping for, but I'm not that way. I like it when new people, like I loved when you came to the wrestling matches with me. I thought that was awesome. That was fun. But do you have anything that you...
Politics. There was a time where I felt like I could like kind of sit back and read the paper with my reading glasses on while I smoked a pipe and would just think things out through long and thoughtful discourse.
Now it's not that way anymore.
Now people are actually participating in the political process.
A lot of new fans have come to the arena.
It's a lot,
Someone on the text page says, Petty, I'm sick of this whole Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese narrative. Made it simple. Ask my wife, who is aware of sports, who is Caitlin Clark? Basketball was her response. Who is Angel Reese? Who is she? Was her response.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. There you go. All right, Aaron Rodgers. I feel like he could be in the Pettycast every week if we tried hard enough to find material. He was at a live podcast, the You Never Know podcast. It's with a rapper. I don't recall his name. But it was an outdoor kind of stage, and he's doing Q&A with a lot of fans. And this first one's not super petty. It's just kind of funny. This is, and kind of sheds a little bit of a clue on what he may be thinking football wise. This is a young female fan, probably looked to be early teens, asking, will you ever play for the Bears?
Will Aaron Rodgers ever go to the Bears?
Oh boy. Security, can we get her out of here? I need some security.
Can you take it easy on her on this one?
No, but I believe there's a team that might play in Chicago this year.
What's
a road
he?
Trip. I don't know. I'm not sure. Gotta check it out.
Are you speaking in code?
I love Chicago, though. Way more than they love me. It's been a great relationship, all one way.
Okay, so that was. We have more Aaron Rodgers here in a second.
So,
Steelers
being a team that play them on the road.
Yep.
The fact that he knew that he knew their schedule and had thought about that at least. That seems like the simplest thing in the world, and yet it somehow makes it feel more real that he's serious about going to the Steelers.
I think it makes it. I was always surprised. Any NFL player I've talked to about knowing the schedule or the schedule release. They've always come off way more disengaged from the schedule in the upcoming season than the fans are. You know, like I'm sitting here talking to a former player, so I don't know how you felt about the schedule. Like, how much did you know the Jags or Texans schedule when you were on those teams during training camp and stuff? Did you have certain
games I knew those pretty well.
Did you? Yeah.
Yeah, I'd been looking about it, thinking about it, obsessing about it, Sean.
Obsessing.
Voodoo dolls, all that stuff.
Well, that it would be the Steelers whose schedule he would know, I think, is probably somewhat significant. No, not much petty in that cut. Let's take a listen to this one. This is Aaron Rodgers trolling a Bears fan.
I was born and raised in Chicago, so as a Bears fan, I want to ask how much you...
Go ahead.
Contemplated retirement. You know, you play golf. Just play more golf, man. You don't have to sign anywhere. Just, you know, take it easy.
You want him out? You want him gone?
Best to greener pastures.
I'm guessing you're like the normal Bears fan. The best thing about Bears fans is every year
this is our year. This is our year. We added this guy and that guy, and oh, and we got a new coach from Detroit. Yeah. Oh, man. Look out.
This is it.
Right? Packers fans, we know that, right? And what does every coach that signs at the Bears say? We got to beat the Packers, right?
Yeah.
Packers don't give a
Okay.
Packers don't even think of you.
Yeah.
The Lion does not concern
it's
itself.
It's a rivalry if both teams think of each other. This is not a rivalry to us. You're just one of 31 is all you are, Bears.
Yeah.
Suck on that.
Is getting himself back in good graces with Packers fans for potentially in the, you know, whatever
the one-day contract. Yeah.
Brett Favre, you got to hit that sweet spot, you know, where the bad feelings after your retirement have started to wane, but before you've been wrapped up in public scandal. Mm-hmm. Like, if Favre had waited a couple more years to reconcile with the Packers, it might not have all worked out. But he hit the sweet spot.
So
Rodgers got to start planning for that sometime before the age of 50.
I was, not to get too far on a tangent, about the Favre documentary. You and I talked about it back in the 6 o'clock hour. Seth and I both watched the Fall of Favre documentary yesterday. It's only an hour long. I would say it's worth watching. They're very dissimilar in many ways, Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre. And yet there's a ton of similarities too, just based on like how engaged both of them seem to want to be in the off season with all the OTAs and minicamp. Like Favre, I don't know. I just came away watching that thing and man, these two are, they're very similar, and the results were very similar in the end, in that the departures were very acrimonious. You know, like in the end, the divorces. I just thought for two guys whose personalities couldn't seem more dissimilar, you got Favre, the gunslinger, country hick, and you got Aaron Rodgers, who's, you know, the granola crunchy, you know, Silicon Valley, Bay Area, you know, Cal guy, that how they viewed the importance of football in their lives, I thought was somewhat similar based on that documentary.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing for me is that just Green Bay turns quarterbacks into weirdos. I think that there's such a big fish in a very, very, very small pond.
Yeah.
And to the point where it probably just screws up your entire perspective on everything.
Yeah.
I think it's, I feel like you're all but destined. If Jordan Love makes it as a Green Bay quarterback, he's also going to be an extreme weirdo by the end of it.
Keep an eye on Jordan Love. Did you see the video of Jordan Love throwing out the first pitch at a Brewers game?
Oh, no, you sent it to me and I didn't watch it. Was it bad?
I'll let you be the judge.
Was it bad because of the actual, was it the process or was it just a wild throw that got away from
it? It ended up going over the plate. I'll let you
take it. But it just looks janky.
There's a link to it.
Charles Barkley?
There's a link to it in the rundown right there in this segment right here, because I was going to bring it up in this segment. Yeah, you can take a look at it. Take a look at it while I play Stan Van Gundy. This is just some good old-fashioned chirping about refereeing by a Van Gundy. I just needed this in my life. Stan Van Gundy being petty about the officiating down the stretch in Game 3 of the Knicks and the Pacers.
There's a whistle.
Yeah, but
9.7.
But if
are
you're
you
the Knicks,
kidding?
You'll live with that if you're the Knicks, though, because this is only 2 versus 3. So now you send Halliburton.
I understand, but I'd rather have no call. And I don't get this. The way they have called the game throughout the playoffs and tonight.
Oh, you're saying
that's
a foul?
Call.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a foul. That's a foul in the 2025 playoffs?
Bridges can't believe it as well.
Well, what have I been watching that would make that a foul call?
I just needed a Van Gundy complaining about officiating in my life. That's all. Felt like this is
Stan
a good place
Van,
to park it.
No, you know what? Stan Van takes too many shots at Houston. I vaguely recall him taking a shot at the Astros at some point, making a cheap, stupid trash can joke.
I think he did, yeah.
I got no love. That's the two brothers. I always try to remember whenever I'm meeting with a sibling of a person who I despise. I might despise that the sibling, but I got to give this guy a chance.
Can't hold
just
it
like
against
there's Stan
them.
Van Gundy and Jeff Van Gundy.
Yep.
One I despise. One I think is one of my all-time favorite people in sports. Yeah.
I saw that you clicked on the video. What did you think of Jordan?
I thought it looked like he was trying to throw a football. He's just kind of used the ball got over the plate.
Yeah.
Had a nice, threw it with a lot of touch.
Yeah.
It was like he was thrown into a defensive end who was playing tight end on the goal line. It was just like, or an offensive, a tackle eligible where you just got to be sure you don't throw it too hard for the big fella.
I tried, as I'm looking at that, I'm like, all right, I don't want to be too critical. Of course, I did retweet it and say, this is an NFL quarterback. I did do that on social media. But after I tweeted that, didn't delete the tweet, but I did remember like, oh yeah, CJ threw out a first pitch at an Astros game last year and didn't look like your classic thrower of a baseball. CJ Stroud as well threw the ball like a quarterback would throw the ball. So I didn't want to be hypercritical of it. You know, I didn't like the fact that Jordan Love lobbed it way up in the air. I mean, put a little mustard
on it. Took the safe route.
Yeah.
You're supposed to be living up to the image of Favre, okay?
Yeah, man.
Oh, you just do everything exactly the same way Brett Favre did it if you want to be successful, son.
Up to and including how funds get dispersed in Mississippi.
Yes.
Never mind. No,
Jordan Love played. He did play baseball as a youth up through middle school.
Okay.
So it's not like some of these, more and more, it's more common that you get a lot of NFL players that never played baseball at all.
Yeah.
And we saw, you know, Will Anderson would own that he doesn't know how to swing a bat, you know?
Okay.
These guys just don't, they haven't been exposed to it. But Jordan Love has been exposed to it, and yet he went up there and threw it like a football.
That was J.J. Watt's softball game, right? That Will?
I think so, yeah.
Dude, I was there. What I loved about Will is that it was clear during batting practice that he had never swung a baseball bat, or at least had very rarely swung a baseball bat, and yet he volunteered to be in the home run derby. Which I thought was awesome. Like, he was horrible, and it was great, and he's awesome. Yeah.
He knows so little about baseball that he didn't even know to be embarrassed by how bad he was at baseball.
Right.
You know?
I don't know that he gets embarrassed about anything. Like, I'm just so happy all the time.
Well, no, and it's a different mindset, though, too. Like, when we were growing up, like, it would be, if you didn't know how to play baseball, it's a big obstacle in your social life, you know?
Yeah.
That was what everybody did all day long.
Yep.
And now it's not that way.
No.
I think, like, just kids are so far removed from it being, because, you know, like, I don't know if they even go out and play in the neighborhood anymore.
I don't either.
I haven't seen it in forever.
Every day.
Last time I saw, like, some 12-year-olds out at the school fields messing around with no parents around, or in a backyard with no parents around playing baseball. And believe me, I've peeked over a lot of fences. Is that Seth Payne in our bag? Why? He's fine. Don't worry about him. He's just a little kooky.
Oh, my God. text message.
When I take my ice cream truck around the neighborhood, I look. I look hard.
Through my binoculars.
I'm finding anybody. Yeah.
I pull up in my ice cream truck. I whip out my binoculars.
You kids want ice cream from a stranger?
Hello?
How can I interest you in you guys ever play stickball?
Candy? Stickball. Someone says, no, y'all are being petty because who cares? The Astros are a winning organization. That's fine if you feel that way, I suppose. If you don't want clarity, we're being petty about the Astros being clandestine about all the injury stuff. Yeah, we're the petty ones. Fine. As long as somebody's being petty, that's what this segment is for. All right, keep sending your... keep sending your texts in, 713-572-4610.
Wait, can you read that text again?
Sure. No, y'all are being petty because who cares? The Astros are a winning organization.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So
I don't know. Yeah, listen, I don't – the Astros being a winning organization, this is where that falls flat, all right? The Astros have also been to four World Series. Have they won all of those World Series? No. They've been to the ALCS 7 straight times. Did they go to the World Series every single one of those times? No. So at what point do you stop tweaking and being persnickety about things?
Yes.
Like, you can always listen, listener. I fear that you have succumbed to a meek outlook on life. You can always ask for and demand more, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Astros could be undefeated right now. Be undefeated right now. And I would be grousing about something.
Yes.
So you will never, ever, ever, ever... shut me down by saying, well, that's a good team, won't worry about them. Do you think the coaches and front offices of various great teams around sports come to work every morning and say, steady as she goes, we've had some success, so not gonna change a damn thing.
Yep.
No, never accept that.
No.
I worry for you, dear texter, that you have put limits on yourself in this life. Whine more.
I'll give you his number. You can get in touch with him. You guys can have a nice chat. Last one here. I hope Stroud is one day as petty as Rodgers, but it's towards the Colts. CJ is already. Remember, he's been caught multiple times saying things about the Colts on his little documentary. He talked about Indy was kind of a trash city.
Trash city.
Yeah,
if he had gone to a trash city like Indianapolis, he might not have been as happy.
Jay Reed says the 9-year-old in his car is cracking up at Seth's creeper jokes and the ice cream truck joke. You're hitting big with the 9-year-old, Seth. Just like you wanted to in your ice cream truck.
This is steadily turning less and less funny.
Good job. That's, yeah. All right. Speaking of the Astros.
Let me speak for a sponsor now.
This is what it looks like coming up for the next 25 games. If you're an Astros fan, this is the time to make some hay here in the standings. Or is it, based on recent years with the Astros? We'll talk about that coming up next. All right. There's different ways to look at the Astros season so far. 28 and 25. I'm going to choose, on the heels of being very petty in the previous segment, I'm going to choose to look at this thing glass half full, that they're 28 and 25 right now. Pretty much the whole season without Yordan Alvarez, like, because even when Yordan was playing, he was negative wins above replacement when he was playing. You could argue, like, oh, by war, they would have been better off with no Yordan this year so far. He's either been a negative war guy, negative wins above replacement guy, or he's been injured so far this year. They've had injuries to their pitching staff. Three-fifths of the staff that they, or the rotation that they viewed coming into the year with, the five guys they viewed as being their starting rotation, three of them are gone. Two of them are probably gone for the year, and Spencer Arrighetti's basically been gone for the entire season. And yet, I look at the playoff standing, Seth, and if the season were to end today, guess who the final wild card team would be? The Houston Astros.
That's right. I was just looking at the wild card standings myself.
Yeah.
They are, by win percentage, they're 1/1000th of a point above the Kansas City Royals.
Take that, Royals. Yeah.
Take that, Royals. We own you.
Suckers. Yeah. So that's how I choose to look at it, is they've had a lot of negative thrust on them. I guess the question is how much of it can get fixed. I do think they played a hard schedule, too. They played one of the harder schedules in baseball. Things really ease up here, and I'm just using the power rankings. I just fired open the power rankings on CBSSports.com. They dropped yesterday, and the Astros are 13th. That's about where they've been hanging most of the years, middle of the pack, because they don't win more than three games in a row ever, and they don't lose more than three games in a row. Like, they have been the quintessential hovering around 500 team all year long. 15 of the 25 games they play coming up here, their next 25 games, so really through almost the end of June, are against 15 of the 25 are against teams that are bottom feeders. They play the A's tonight and tomorrow. They play the Pirates next week for three. The Pirates are awful. The White Sox are even worse than the Pirates. They've got three home games against the White Sox coming up in a couple of weeks. They play the A's and the Angels to round out this stretch of 25 games. 60% of the games they play in these next 25, Seth, are against bottom eight teams in the league, according to these power rankings. And the rest of them are not against world beaters. The best team they play is probably Minnesota, and that's at home. They play three games at home. They're a much better home team than they've been the last couple years, the Astros. Yeah. They're 15-10 at home this year. So this is a part of the schedule here where they can do what they did last year in June and really win a bunch of games. Last year they were having to do it while making up a 10-game deficit to the Mariners. This year, they're in a dead heat with the Mariners going into
right.
the stretch.
Yeah, and they very much have an opportunity here that if they continue with some of the trends from this last 17-game stretch, where they could go on a couple of runs. Get one of those ones that just lifts you right up. You win 8 of 10 games or what have you. I don't even care what the streak is. Just something that can elevate you and give you some cushion as you enter the last two-thirds of the season or the last half of the season. The biggest one, the stat that's kind of alarming in a good way, but that paints the picture of exactly what this team is, and in a team that's been leaning on its bullpen. The Astros are 24-4 when leading or tied after six innings.
That's a crazy number
for a basically a 500 baseball team.
Yeah,
if you can get into the sixth inning just tied,
yeah,
tied or winning, but just tied, that you've got a really good chance. If with your meager offensive output, just one run is going to be enough.
Yeah,
so. Like, that's how good the bullpen has been with an offense that has been very much underperforming. Even in this last stretch, they were, you got to go to the advanced stats where it looks like a really good stretch offensively. They weren't scoring a whole bunch of runs during that 17-game stretch, but they did do a lot of things better at the plate. If you just get Yordan back and looking like classic Yordan, even slumping Yordan by his standards in the past.
Yeah.
Like, when he slumps, he's still a better than average baseball player.
Like an 800
player.
OPS. So, like,
you don't have to get classic Yordan, yeah, but just get like 800 OPS Yordan and Altuve playing the way he played in this last series. Yeah, you've really got something there.
I want to play the audio from that we just played in the Pettycast from Chandler Rome Chandler Rome of The Athletic was on the Foul Territory podcast. It was with AJ Pruszynski, and they got talking about the Astros and injuries and how they as a ball club handle disseminating the information on these injuries. I want to play this because it plays into a question I have about Yordan. Here is Chandler Rome.
I'm not here like seeking like medical records of players. Like, I don't want to know what medicines they're on. I don't want, like, we're not asking for much here, but the clarity that they provide is non-existent. And the prognoses they give is usually it exceeds what they say, or it's not all the way true. Like, the lack of just alignment and communication has been something that has now spanned three general managers. It spanned three field managers. So this is not something that is new this year. It's something that has been for a while. The Tucker contusion thing, I mean, at the end of the day, like, it got to be where, like, they were making him look bad because, like, fans thought he was out for 3.5 months with a bruise. When, you know, I talked to doctors, I wrote a story where I quoted like four orthopedic surgeons who said, like, yeah, you know, it's possible to be out for four. These things can take this long to heal for a bone bruise, but it's not that common. And come to find out, there was a fracture in there.
Okay. So I listened to that, and I remember, boy, when Chandler talks about that, it is PTSD to go back and think about that Kyle Tucker injury where it felt like he's coming back, he's doing this, he's doing that. Next thing you know, it's September, and we find out the leg's been broken the whole time. What if, well, I don't want to think about this, but what if Yordan's injury right now is the 2025 version of the Kyle Tucker injury, and maybe not so much to where it turns out it's a broken bone in his hand, but it's one of these things that it just keeps going and going.
I think that one thing they learned from that ordeal in 2022 was that you got to actually treat it like it's more than something minor. And because
you're talking about Yordan's hand.
Yordan, in 2022.
Yeah.
That you got to actually address it pretty aggressively, and then it'll be all right. So the Kyle Tucker situation was, that was one in which also, I think, to back the Astros up on it, I'm not saying that Chandler is wrong about them being like very withholding
secretive,
of information.
Yeah.
But the Kyle Tucker situation was one where they did not know that it was a fracture immediately. I think that's where sometimes writers or sports fans as well get frustrated that medical technology isn't as good as it is in the movies. Like, the fact of the matter is sometimes stuff doesn't show up on imaging. And could the Astros have still been more out front of it? Sure, possibly. I don't know if it's something that fans care about as much as the people who cover the team care about. I feel like kind of like steroids in baseball back in the day. The writers cared a lot more about it than the fans themselves did. And then with this, which isn't nearly as big a topic, like you could do a Pender poll on this, I suppose. Do you, as a fan, actually get frustrated that the Astros don't release information, or is it just that's just the way it is, and you don't worry about it?
Yeah, are we making too much of it?
Well, because ultimately, it doesn't affect whether or not the guy comes back.
Right.
I think for guys that cover the team, I know it gets frustrating that Chandler probably gets 20 DMs a day asking about, hey, what's wrong with this guy's elbow? Hey, what's wrong with this? And it's frustrating when you're a person that wants to be able to give answers than when you just have to say the team hasn't released anything. And also Chandler did get, it didn't seem like the team was so happy about him actually understanding and knowing Justin Verlander's situation. That's when it felt like, to me at least, as an outside observer, when things got really adversarial between Chandler and the team, was that Chandler wasn't lying. Chandler was completely accurate in his reporting of it, but the team seemed to have a grudge against Chandler and not wanting him to be proven correct or something.
I think the biggest difference right now, as I'm thinking this through, with the Yordan injury and the Kyle Tucker injury, Kyle Tucker got injured in early June last year, and the Astros actually went on a tear. They were one of, if not the best teams in baseball for the next couple of months after that. They seized control of the division. They were back by 10 games. They were in first place by the All-Star break last year without Kyle Tucker. I don't know that this version of the Astros can go on that type of run without Yordan Alvarez. This is not as good an offensive team as last year's team overall. Well, I mean, if some of the supporting guys keep hitting the way they are, I'm just not counting on that. The pitching's been really, really good. I think the biggest thing is this: Yordan is the only threatening left-handed bat they've got in this lineup. It's really hard to go through a huge chunk of the season with Victor Caratini as your only left-handed bat, and he's a switch hitter. you know?
Yeah.
And I, so I think
and
it's
just throw whichever reliever you want out there. No
yeah.
Big deal.
There's We're no punishment for not playing the chess game there with the reliever. So I think, I'm not saying they can't do it. I just don't see the Astros without Yordan Alvarez going on the type of run that they did for a couple of months after they lost Kyle Tucker last year.
I don't know. I mean, it's baseball. It's not like it's impossible. It's just your chances are a lot better with Yordan Alvarez. And I'm still leaning to, if I had to bet money on it, I bet that he's going to come back and he's going to have a typical Yordan Alvarez season, as long as he does come back. Because I think they're going to, just like somebody that's got an ailing hamstring and you want him to feel good for a couple weeks before you send him back, I think that's probably how they're treating this hand, is they want to have at least a week or so of him doing everything and feeling completely fine the next morning before they want to mess with a reoccurrence.
I do wonder if there's a breaking point for the fans and for people like us if the injury just keeps lingering and lingering and all we're getting is video of him running the bases and stuff like that. Like there was a breaking point with the Tucker thing, you know? Like there was a breaking point where people were frustrated that we were getting no information on that.
I think that they do it for a reason. I think that they have that old attitude of just, man, you don't want any information we don't have to divulge. We're not going to put it out there because it can be a competitive advantage for somebody else. And at the end of the day, it's not such a big topic that I don't think there's anybody in a baseball office who should be worried about, like, fans are getting antsy about our injury policy, our injury information policy.
Oh, no, yeah.
This is going to be the thing that sinks us.
And I don't think they are. We're the ones out here interacting with all the people who are antsy about it. And I'm just wondering if there is a point where that happens with Yordan.
We did it with Christian Harris all last year on the football side of things. And they didn't give us a damn thing. See, I don't know. I never thought to get really all that peeved about it. I don't get peeved about the Astros.
The difference there is eventually, at least for me, I forgot Christian Harris was even on the team by like week 9. That won't happen with Yordan. You know, we will not forget Yordan Alvarez. Like, they were getting by without Christian Harris. I don't know how much they can get by without Yordan long term. We'll see. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. The 16-team college football playoff appears to be veering quickly towards reality. What is this thing going to look like? What is the role of the SEC and the Big Ten in all of this? We'll discuss that coming up next. Okay, all signs pointing right now to a 16-team college football playoff sooner rather than later. The powers that be with the college football playoff already changed one of the rules this week. They changed how the tournament is going to be seeded. Last year, the top four conference champions, five conference champions make the field automatically. The top four got the top four seeds, and it proved to be it proved to be broken to a degree. Boise State and Arizona State wound up getting a bye when their body of work clearly didn't warrant it. And that led to some issues with the competitiveness of some of the games and how the whole thing unfolded. The final four teams left standing were seeds 5, 6, 7, and 8 in the tournament. That's just an odd thing to have happen. So that probably cures some of that. And it's probably, Seth, a step on the way to a 16-team playoff, if we're being honest. And I know Greg Sankey, the commissioner of the SEC, talked extensively about this in Destin, Florida yesterday about possibility of a 16-team format. Not committing to anything, though. They're just open. They're open to ideas, the SEC.
Yeah. I think the big thing, the real hardcore negotiations will be how many spots each conference gets. And they've gone kind of the way, I know they do this in NCAA wrestling. Basically, if you have a really strong conference, you send more wrestlers from that conference to the national tournament. And so with the football, it would be, okay, the SEC has if they have consistently that many better teams and they get five entrants every year, the lesser conferences might only get two selections and whatever it might be.
Yeah, the format that I've seen kicked around, and if I'm guessing there's some substance to this, I'm guessing this has been talked about on whiteboards in back rooms somewhere, would be a 16-team tournament. Four bids for the SEC, four bids for the Big Ten. Those are the two big money conferences. Two for the ACC, two for the Big 12. So the other two Power Four conferences each get multiple bids, automatic. And then one for the Group of Five, which is that's the little guys. And then three at-larges. So there could end up being five SEC teams. Four automatically. There could be five or even six, depending on how the at-larges unfold. So that's
well,
what
seven, right? Yeah,
or seven. Yeah. They got all the three at larges. So or the same thing with the Big Ten. So so that's what's being kicked around right now. They're also kicking around both the Big Ten and the SEC the possibility that those other automatic bids are actually determined by play-in games.
Yeah,
within the conference, that you'd have the two teams battling for the conference title. They would be in automatically, but then the other two automatic bids would be decided by a couple of play-in games. Which the first thing that pops into my head is that my God, like you could have kids there by the time it's all said and done. If you're on a conference champion that makes it to the actual tournament championship for the national championship, you're playing a full NFL. You're playing 17 games. It's a full NFL season.
Yeah, I wonder if that's that might be one little feather in your cap.
You think it's a selling point?
Or an incentive for kids to play in the playoffs?
Yeah,
because we're going to see more and more kids just opt out of the playoffs in coming years. I would imagine. I stayed consistent over the course of 17 games or 16 or 15, however it might be.
Yeah,
and it's still not quite as rigorous as an NFL season physically, but it's still that. That rookie wall that you hear about so often, it's real. Like a lot, but less so probably now because guys are playing a boatload of college football games.
I'll tell you what another kind of hidden thing is too for specific players is that if they play all the way to the title game and then they go to the Senior Bowl, which is the very next week, and participate in it, there were a few Notre Dame and Ohio State kids that did that, and that was a big green check mark in their favor that they went straight from playing in the national championship game to going to Mobile, Alabama and practicing all week and play, you know, because, you know, we know here locally, you know, that our team here loves to vibe out. How much do you love the game of football? That's a big feather in your cap. If you love it enough to practice at the Senior Bowl,
it's turning one of those things where it's not a knock against a guy for sitting out a bowl game, except that it is that, okay, I'm not going to consciously downgrade you for, I'm not going to consciously downgrade you for sitting out of a bowl game. And yet I'm going to favor the guys that I'm impressed by the guys who did.
Yeah.
The guy that you're in competition to get drafted with that guy, he's got a check plus. So it's a net negative for you.
That's exactly
if you
right.
sit out of the bowl game.
We don't downgrade them. We just upgrade these guys. Like, all right. Yeah. I mean, the guys I'm competing with just got an extra point for doing it. Okay. That's fine.
It's like my bank manager telling me, like, well, listen, no, we're not going to give you any interest on that account, but just don't worry about it. It's not going to go down at all.
Right.
You're not going to lose money.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, but I heard about this inflation thing. Ha, ha, ha. Fake news.
Fake news. Dude, Sankey came out guns a-blazing yesterday, man. He does not like the fact that some of these other smaller conferences, the smaller conferences, I guess a few of them must have been putting out press releases about the seating changes.
Yeah.
Because the SEC... The SEC benefits from anything that allows more talented teams to either get higher seeded or get more teams into the tournament.
Greg Sankey came out and basically, SEC commissioner,
came
out and said, I mean, yeah, do whatever you want. We still had half the team. You know, if we were in a Final Four format, we had half the teams this year. What do you, no big deal.
I thought the committee, as soon as the committee left Alabama out last year in favor of Indiana, I'm like, oh yeah. Even though Indiana's a Big Ten team, but they're not like a blue blood Big Ten team. I'm like, oh yeah, this thing's going to 16 teams. You're leaving out Alabama. You're leaving out Ole Miss. Like, oh
well,
yeah.
Now it's become, and it's also become for coaches, you know, it used to be, oh, hey, our team made a bowl game. And then when it turned out there was basically there was a bowl game for every team in college football.
Yeah.
It became less of an item on your resume. At some point, there's nothing football coaches love more than opportunities to not get fired.
Yes.
And if you just expand the playoffs up to 64, hey, we made the playoffs.
Can you imagine?
Three straight years,
64,
Brian.
64 yeah. team football playoff?
I can't imagine it. Hey, people would have thought you were a lunatic for suggesting 16 teams a few years ago.
Dude, at least you still have good teams in a 16-team one. There are 64 power conference teams. Period. Like, or 65.
They'll just be waiting for that 16 seed to knock out.
Yes.
Your 16 seed in some of those would be the worst team in some conference somewhere.
It absolutely would be.
Playing
yeah.
against a really good football team.
Yeah, no, they'd be blowouts.
Potential national champion.
Gamblers would love it, I think. It's, you know, it's several more games to bet on. Text messages coming in for the Pettycast. Sean and Seth, I love the show. Went to an Astros game, and a player from the opposing team tossed a ball to the fans in the Crawford boxes after the third out, and this turd, Astros fan, caught it in his glove, then threw it back onto the field What a DB. Is this a common practice? I would have been so happy getting a baseball. I don't care who it was, unless it was phony tough guy Joe Kelly. That's from
it's considered an admirable thing to do to throw the opposing players.
And, but I thought that was more for home runs.
For home runs. Yeah. No. Yeah. For guys from the actual field throwing it into the stands.
Yeah.
You got to give it to a kid at least. Yeah. That's I don't frown on that behavior. I admire it. I'm guessing he was at least three beers in.
Yeah.
And he's just it's a fun thing. I wouldn't read too much into it.
Well, JV Tamales.
He didn't throw it at the player, did he?
Disagrees. It just said he threw it back. It didn't say if he threw it, if he was targeting anybody.
If somebody from the opposing team throws,
admire that even more.
I think the go-to move is if somebody from the opposing team throws a ball into the stands and you as an adult catch it.
Yeah.
If there's a kid from the opposing team nearby, give the ball to that kid.
Yes.
Just look for a jersey in the stands or something and give it to that kid.
That's a good call. But yeah, especially the opposing jersey because it's a ball from his team. That's a good call. Hi, guys. I think the upcoming schedule for the Astros is a chance to make hay. However, it seems like they more often do not do that when that's the situation. Next text message. Love my Stros, but we always play down to our competition, LOL. How will we be disappointed if they come out of that stretch and they're still only three games over 500? I guess technically it's 25 games.
Oh, 100% you'd be disappointed.
Yeah,
yes.
Like I'm super disappointed. Yeah, if they're just treading water still at the end of June.
And let's remember, the playing down to the competition doesn't apply when you're a mediocre baseball team.
That's
so
true.
Like there is no playing down. These teams that they're facing that are on this supposedly easy stretch, the records aren't that much further off from the Astros. Yep. The whole damn league's 500 right now.
All right. A new...
That guy threw an LOL in there.
So he did throw an LOL. Yep, he did. There is one new multi-gajillionaire in the quarterback ranks. He did a press conference. Do we expect C.J. Stroud to take this same approach that this particular quarterback did? We'll let you hear. We'll let you be the judge. That is coming up next.